writing about the Japanese-American internment in the 1950s, Carlos Budelsan writing about Filipino migrant laborers in the 1940s, and yes, of course, Maxine Hong Kingston, my great teacher, who I have to say I was a very poor student, but she had faith in me, and I owe her a great deal.
A very poor student, right, who just won the Pulitzer Prize. We thank you so much for spending this time with us. Our guest, Viet Thanh Nguyen, author of the new novel, The Committed, sequel to his Pulitzer Prize-winning book, The Sympathizer, professor at the University of Southern California. And we'll link to the Washington Post piece you co-authored, Bipartisan Political Rhetoric About Asia Leads to Anti-Asian Violence Here. And that does it for our show. Happy birthday to Miriam Barnard. Democracy Now! Is produced with Renee Feltz, Mike Berkey, Neguzder, Libby Rainey, Nermeen Sheikh, Maria Teresena, Carla Wills, Tommy Warnock, Tarina Nadura, Sam Alkoff, Tamari Astudio, John Hamilton, Robbie Karen, Honey Masood, Adriana Contreras. Our general manager is Julie Crosby. Special thanks to Becca Staley, Miriam Barnard. I'm Amy Goodman. Stay safe. Wear a mask.
This is Judy Berry from Earth First, and when I'm in Portland, I listen to non-commercial community radio, KBOO Portland, no compromise in defense of the truth.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. Due to the temporary closure of in-station activity at KBOO, board meetings will be conducted online via public video conferencing unless otherwise noted. A public link and phone number to attend the meetings are available on our website. The KBOO Board of Directors meets the fourth Monday of the month starting at 6 p.m. Please visit our website at kboo.fm to verify if a meeting is being held.
Are you a KBOO member? Tell us why you support KBOO. Call our listener testimonial line and leave a message telling us why you support KBOO Community Radio. Testimonials will be used on air during our next membership drive. Call 503-231-8032, extension 302. That's 503-231-8032, extension 302. Thanks.
This is KBOO Portland. It's 8:01. It's Monday. Time for some more talk radio with your hosts, Cecil and Celeste. Stay tuned.
Remember what I told you last week?
Mm-hmm.
Good morning.
Good morning.
You're listening to your community connection, KBOO Portland, 90.7 here in the city. This is More Talk Radio at 91.9 if you're in Hood River. 104.3 if you're in Philomath, and if you're in the KBOO's metropolitan area of Portland, it's 90.7 FM. More talk radio, and just before we even start, I think it's really important that Cecil, may I say something? This has been an interesting and very somber weekend. Nonetheless, we're not giving up to the hatred that's been expressed against our Asian brothers and sisters. And we want all of KBOO's listening audience to know that we stand in solidarity against hate directed toward the Asian community, all Asian communities, especially here right now in the last vestiges of a Donald Trump affected and infected world. I don't know, Cecil, you know, I know that's kind of an unexpected start, and I had made up my mind last night that I wanted to say something about that, and it just kind of poured out of me without me being able to kind of quite put it in its proper place. But
yeah,
it had to be said. It must be said.
Yeah. Hashtag stop Asian hate, and people are organizing throughout the nation, and I think it's important to continue solidarity and to stand with those who are facing the onslaught of racism and oppression, and make sure that there is not a inch of separation between those who are standing for human rights. It's a time, it's a moment when we need to stand and resist all acts of oppression and hate, and make sure that we are clear that we are in this together to fight white supremacy and the oppression of patriarchy. It's so important.
Yes. And having said that, then, let us now say good morning, and that today we have the honor of interviewing, chatting with, sharing the accomplishments of somebody who is standing against hate like that. We have with us here today, and I don't normally qualify people this way, but I think it's important that I do, because this way we know that the wave of accomplishments and positivity continues. And what I want to say is, this is a young person who is being the change that he wants to see in the world. And when I don't remember even exactly how I stumbled across his organization, but I was so glad that I did. And he is working to change something that has had a pernicious effect on the Portland area. Ever since this state became a state in the Union, it has decided that it did not want people of African ancestry to be here, free or slave. And consequently, laws coming down through the years have sought to disenfranchise Black citizens from everything from voting to property ownership and a good education, so many other things. This particular organization, Taking Ownership Portland, has sought to reverse a trend that was even felt as recently as the late 90s here in Portland, and that is the erosion of Black ownership, of Black home ownership here in the city. And so without further ado, I would love to introduce Randall Wyatt, who has birthed a dream called Taking Ownership, and have him describe not only that dream, but how that dream is becoming a reality, making more of a reality of home ownership for Black Portlanders. Welcome, Randall. How are you doing this morning?
Hey, thank you for having me. I'm doing good, you know, kind of waking up, you know, but yeah, pleasure being here. Thanks for having me.
Great. As you're waking up here, the first question is, I'm going to ask, are you a native-born Portlander? Have you been here all of your life?
Yeah, born and raised. Yeah, I grew up in Northeast Portland and Southeast Portland.
Okay, and so I'm going to say the next thing, which in a way it'll start unfolding itself and make a little sense, and that's how long has your family been here in Portland, Oregon? How many generations back?
So I'm first generation Portland. My parents moved here in 1980, just 5 years before I was born.
Okay. So they got here in 1980. They got here a few years before I got here. Portland was a different place then. And yeah. When they got here, what motivated them to move to Portland, Oregon, of all places? And what did they hope to find?
Well, my oldest brother, was very young, and they lived in a small town in Washington called Yakima. And and they're an interracial couple, so they were dealing with a lot of racism. Actually, they were dealing with a lot of discrimination there. And it was a small town with not a whole lot of opportunity. So my dad and mom just wanted to get out of there, get away from it's a small town, so everybody knows everybody. So they just wanted to get away. I had my aunt lived here. She was going to Portland State, so she already had established stuff. They have some friends that live here, so I just wanted to come here for opportunity. And my dad got a job right away, which he literally worked from 1980 till a few years ago. Just wanted to raise a family somewhere with more opportunity.
And so how easy was it for them to find those opportunities?
My dad got a job pretty quickly because he had a connection there. So, he got that job. My dad's one of those, dudes that he's loyal to the soil. So he stayed with them for 30-something years. And then my mom's a white woman, so, she found a job pretty quick, but it took her time before she was ever getting to a point where she was making, adequate money to support support the family with my father. So, yeah, but I don't know a whole lot. I guess I haven't really asked those questions because it was before my time.
Indeed. So, but you do know a lot about, the neighborhoods you grew up and what that was like, and you were right there in the midst of this newer wave of gentrification in Portland. Tell me, say something about the neighborhood you grew up in and how you witnessed the changes that occurred in the 90s almost. Also talking about your experience as a child growing up and how you saw changes over the decades.
Yeah, definitely. So, I grew up off of 31st and Prescott, and it was kind of on the cusp of the Alameda neighborhood that was more affluent white people over there. But you go the other direction towards Alberta, that was a black, there's a concentration of black people, black neighborhoods. I spent a lot of time in North Portland as well, where there was a concentration of black people. I moved out of that area in about 2004, so that's like right before the recession or the 2010 late 2000 era when they were giving out those predatory loans, the ARM loans, and really really impacted the black community. So I didn't witness it firsthand other than driving through the neighborhood from time to time and seeing the changes, but I didn't really quite understand it until I went back to school in the last few years. I'm finishing my bachelor's in black studies, and now I'm understanding how this all went down, how they were displacing this community recently. But yeah, I moved out to Clackamas when I became a father in my late teens, and so I didn't get to see it, but I recognize that these loans did a big part of it. The predatory developers that came in, and they have their own set of rules. They don't have to follow the same rules as residential owners. So they were coming in, lowballing, homeowners, definitely vulnerable homeowners like the Black community whose neighborhoods around them, once white people start moving in around them, there's a whole new standard and expectations that come in where if the Black homeowners aren't keeping up on their homes and they're not up to par to this white standard of cosmetic, you know, looks, they're calling the city and putting liens on the home and fines on the home, and then developers come in and then they lowball them and buy the homes and then knock them down, and they get to throw up these huge buildings with, you know, 20, 30 units in it, which raise up property values, which raise up utility costs, and that's what decimated our Black community of Portland.
All right. So you mentioned about, you know, moving out the Clackamas and coming back. It's almost like for many of us, it's sort of like, wow, I don't recognize this town or this neighborhood any longer, and familiar spots haven't changed. And more importantly, to the work you're doing, people who were in neighborhoods who've been there for maybe generations, things change, and it's sort of like a wake up, almost waking up to a nightmare for many people.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, to have your, you know, neighbors and your backyard filled with people who, you know, you have affinity with, grow up around areas where you have your resources. I live in Albina now. I just bought this house in the Albina neighborhood. You know, we have Urban League down the street. And, you know, culturally specific resources, which are very important to, because different cultures have different needs. But yeah, to wake up and have now condos next to you and a whole different population around you that maybe doesn't treat you the same or treat you, I've heard this a lot, they don't treat them as friendly, or they're constantly getting knocked, you know, the people coming to their door asking them if they're ready to sell. I couldn't imagine that. When this was all going down, I wasn't quite there yet. I just recently became a homeowner, and I worked in mental health before all this took off last year.
Right, right. And you know, you posted you have a video where you are speaking with people you've worked with, homeowners, and one thing that struck me was one gentleman who was saying that, you know, people always seem to be knocking at his door, you know, often when he's ready to sell his house, and at the same time looking at as the neighborhood change and finding that they and other people did not have the resources to fix up their house or their yards, and it was a frightening event, I believe, for many people about what's going to happen. What click off in your mind to want to help the community? How did you begin? What was the concept, or how did it begin in terms of taking ownership?
Well, yeah, you know, when I first, you know, when I went back to school and I started studying this stuff, I learned a lot about how, you know, how this displacement happened, how this gentrification happens, and also just the whole historical context, how we've been socially and economically excluded through oppression, through policies created, as you know, as Celeste was saying, Oregon was initially founded as, and created with the intentions of being a white utopia. So they had no intentions of giving us these opportunities. So, you know, learning about this and then with the social climate changing pretty abruptly with the murder of George Floyd, I've made a name for myself in the community. This isn't, you know, I've constantly been doing projects. I did a big project around Measure 11 education and prevention for youth. And, you know, before this, I worked in youth mental health. And and I'm a hip hop artist. So my music with my band and my solo music speaks to a lot of these injustices and how, as a community, we need to come together to uprise and demand these changes. So people know that about me, and so they started reaching out to me and asking how they can be better allies and accomplices for the Black community and other communities that are marginalized. And I told them, it's gonna take sharing your resources. It's gonna take a village mindset, this individualistic mindset that capitalism tends to breed, isn't gonna be sustainable, and it's definitely not gonna create equity for the Black community and other communities that deserve it and need that kind of reparation, those kind of reparations. So I just said, why don't we go around and start fixing up Black-owned homes? And, I was very naive about it. I was thinking, hey, let's just get a bunch of volunteers and start swinging hammers at homes. It's definitely a little more in-depth than that. You don't want to do that. You want to do a good job, for one. So, we hire licensed, bonded, and insured people now. But and people were like, I can't really swing a hammer or anything. I don't really know anything about fixing homes, but here's some money for your resources and all that. So they started just sending me money to my personal Venmo. And wow. By the end of the week, I'm up to about, $8,000 to $10,000. I have a homeowner who me and my good friend, who's now my project manager, he's a contractor. We had this list of things that this home needed, and we started purchasing them and getting the work done for her. So, people were astonished on how quick we were doing the work, and that we were taking that money and was going directly into doing the work right away. And it just blew up, and more people asked for help with their home, and then more people were just willing to donate. And now we're just kind of building the plane while we're flying. Got a fiscal sponsor, working towards our 501c3 so we can be more legit, but I definitely started this guerrilla style on purpose.
Wow. Amazing.
Yeah, it took over. It took off really fast.
Wow.
That's impressive.
Go ahead, Celeste. I'm sorry.
Oh, no. I'm just saying that's impressive. But since I have the moment here, let me say you're listening to More Talk Radio here on your Community Connection, KBOO Portland, 90.7 here in the metro area. 91.9 if you are in Hood River, White Seven, Washington, in Philomath and Corvallis. It's 104.3, and of course, everywhere on the web, it's KBOO.FM. This is More Talk Radio. I'm Celeste Carey here with Cecil Prescott and our guest, Randall Wyatt of Taking Ownership Portland, PDX, P-Town. We're discussing Randall's venture into assisting Black Portlanders in retaining and attaining home ownership and how important that is really to the health and vitality of the Portland metropolitan area. One of the things I can't say enough, and it goes hand in hand with what I said earlier about us standing in solidarity with the Asian community, and that is a vibrant city is a diverse city. A diverse city is a healthy and wondrous city. And Black Portlanders have really contributed quite a lot to the city's vitality. A lot of people may not know it, but that area where the Rose Garden is used to house a thriving Black business community. And much of the lower levels, and by lower levels, I mean the early numbers, the lower numbers, in Southwest Broadway, that suite held a lot of Black businesses. So this city has had its jazz clubs, Black-owned jazz clubs, filled with national and international guests. And there's been a lot of other things that Portlanders from all ethnicities and nationalities have contributed. But for some reason, it was put in our Constitution, the state of Oregon's Constitution, that there'll be no Black people here. And it's been a difficult turnaround that has extended even into the 21st century. Now, turning that whole attitude that people of African descent don't deserve to be in Oregon. So you've worked really hard to make a change by just, as you put it, and I love the way you said it, swinging a hammer. And sometimes we forget how easy it is to turn the tide by just going out there and doing what occurs to us to do, that right thing that should be done.
Absolutely. And as somebody who's been on a number of committees and in work groups, I know how the red tape works. it definitely stifles progress and production. So I just, you know, I was like, we just need to go out here. If we're really changing the social climate and really trying to dismantle white supremacy, then we got to just go out here and, I guess, ask, you know, they say it's easier to ask for forgiveness than permission. So, you know, I just went out there and did it.
Well, kudos to you.
Without asking.
And so, yeah. So what is it like? I mean, did you start like knocking on people's door and say, "Here I am"? I noticed one woman said, like, "I'm kind of suspicious. You know, all these people are knocking on my doors. What's your angle? How did people respond when you started knocking on doors, or how did you approach people?"
No, we didn't have to knock on doors. So it started with me just kind of, you know, ranting on social media, on Facebook, and just kind of sharing my ideas. And I was thinking, like, you know, asking people, what do you think of this? What do you think of, you know, since so many people were in my DMs asking me how they can contribute. I was like, well, here's my idea. And the first woman that we helped through this organization, she happened to be a fan of my band, Speaker Minds, and she, you know, she's been to a number of shows and she knows what I'm about. So she reached out and was like, I'm a homeowner. I need help with these things. Can you come out? And so from there, it just kind of, people just kept reaching out. And so, and then we created the website, and now we have a home referral section. So then now a lot of people reach out through there with all the publicity we've gotten on the news and through other forms of media. We've just had people pouring in. We're up to, you know, about 100, over 100 families now that are, you know, a few, you know, probably about 60 of them on our wait list, because it takes some time to get around to doing the services. But yeah, no, they've all been coming to us.
All right.
Wow.
Yeah, go ahead, Celeste. I'm sorry.
Oh, well, no, I was just saying, wow. So what is the process for people to come to you? I mean, what does that involve? And I know you said you have a wait list, so people don't get excited. You can take this information down and visit the website, but know that right now there is a wait list. But describe what the process is to get on the wait list.
Yeah, so I mean, just go through our home referral page, put in some brief information, and then I typically reach out within a month or so and get additional information about the house situation. And then we, you know, their annual income, things like that. So the two factors that we really are prioritizing as far as giving the resources are how much money they make per year, and, you know, how the severe their situation is. So, like, over these cold, rainy months, we've been prioritizing weatherization and life safety issues. So we've been doing a lot of roofs and a lot of, like, window replacements and just patching leaks and things like that. That's been our primary focus, and then we've been helping people who are lower income first. So that's it. You know, there's not, we're so new, and we're still trying to work out and solidify our procedure and policies and things like that. But yeah, that's where that's the function so far.
You're listening to More Talk Radio here on your Community Connection, KBOO Portland. And we're speaking with Randall White here. Randall, do you consider yourself the CEO of Taking Ownership?
Yeah, I'm the executive director.
There you go. The executive director of Taking Ownership, an organization, and I'm going to qualify it this way by saying a grassroots organization that has sprung up to help Portlanders maintain their roots. And yeah, I have a reason for using that kind of imagery. And you're listening to More Talk Radio here on your Community Connection, KBOO Portland. The phone number is 503-231-8187. You're welcome to call in. We just have one line, so be patient. Talk to Randall and ask him questions not only about the organization or maybe his motivation, but how you can be a part of this. and help spread this network and strengthen the roots of Black Portlanders here. Because as I said, a diversity makes a strong city. So I wanna back up a little bit, and I want to get back to some of the earlier parts you were talking about when you were talking about that swinging a hammer part. It reminded me of two efforts that I've been a part of. One of them is AmeriCorps, and I will get things done. I can do things. I will do things for America. And then the other thing it reminded me of is Habitat for Humanity. And not only have I helped a couple of friends with their Habitat homes and Sweat Equity, but I've done other things to help support it or publicize it. So it sounds almost like it was based on those two models. What was it coming out of your early studies that made you focus on home ownership? Why home ownership? There's so many things. It could have been health. It could have been teaching kids music. It could have been a lot of things. But you specifically mentioned home ownership, and that intrigued me.
Yeah, so funny, I worked very closely with AmeriCorps and Habitat for Humanity at my last position. I was a student advocate at Portland Youth Builders. So, you know,
yay!
I think that... Yeah, I worked there for about 3 years, and I think that might have played a role as well in, like, why I was thinking, you know, this effort. But really, I just know that home ownership is the most concrete and quickest way to building generational wealth and keeping generational wealth. And I just know how, you know, how displaced our community became, you know, how everybody got pushed out. Not everybody, but so many people got pushed out east and lost, you know, are away from a lot of the resources. So I'm like, how do we keep these communities alive? How do we allow these people that did hang on to their homes to stay in their homes so they can keep it in their family? And then also, you know, another factor was, how do we, you know, raise property values in these communities? You know, we know that the police are funded by property taxes somewhat, and so, you know, sometimes I feel like if there's not a lot of people that have homes and paying taxes, are we undervalued for that reason? So I was like, maybe we can keep people and create more homeowners. We can get more, you know, be valued more by law enforcement and other resources that come from paying property taxes and raising property value.
That's an interesting way of looking at it. Because you're right, when we were pushed out further east, many people went into rental property. And some of the rental property people went in was dilapidated property. You know, some were dilapidated, broken down. Some were so far out that it caused people to spend so much of their income on things like transportation. It made it difficult to have anything left over to save. And so that does help keep people anchored and from going into generational poverty. Because if you don't have any way of maintaining the money that you earn and helping that money grow into wealth, well, you're going to live a marginal life. And what's the phrase? Hand to mouth, you know, life. For the first family that you helped, you don't have to tell us who they are, but tell us a little bit about their situation and how did you feel when you got involved with them? What motivated you to connect with them?
Well, the big motivation was, you know, they're the first family, and I was excited to just have a project. And but this family actually has a duplex, and her daughter was moving in next door, and it was pretty run down, and she recently was on, had to go on disability and just wasn't making the money that she used to be able to maintain her property. So we came in, and that was the motivation, to just help somebody you know, clean up the other unit for her daughter to move in. You know, so that was that. And then also the, you know, the mission also, that, so it was just like be able to start something, and that was the first project, so we went full head of steam with it.
What were the particulars? I mean, when they came to you or when you connected them, what was it that they needed? Was it that they need financial assistance, or did they need help reinforcing or repairing the building?
They need help, you know, both financial assistance and that, you know, with repairing the building. They had they needed, you know, new windows badly. They needed carpet, interior painting, things like that. Now, at this time, we weren't, you know, it was the summertime, so we weren't prioritizing, like, weatherization, and I didn't know that this project was going to blow up the way it did. So as, you know, we've gotten more homeowners, we've had to be a little more specific on the services we provide. At this time, we were just like, how do we fix this house up as much as possible? And the donations that were coming in were going to this particular home. It wasn't to the full, you know, Black community that we're serving. So, but yeah, that's what we were doing for her, is providing a service to, so she can have that money to keep for, you know, a rainy day in the future, or, you know, pay for other stuff, especially because she was dealing with some health issues.
Great, great. You mentioned that, you know, it takes a community to create this. And tell me something about your outreach to community partners, realtors or contractors or plumbers or who else. Do people just say, oh, yeah, I want to do it? How do you convince people to participate in this endeavor?
You know, that's what's been beautiful, is I haven't had to convince. It's just been the work we're doing has really attracted people and enticed people. They've been, you know, they've loved that we, you know, we're out here really doing hands-on work. And so people have just been coming to me. You know, I've reached out to some people early on, and I still do here and there when we need service. By the way, we need a plumber, so if you know one, you know, let me know. But also, you know, I reach out to a lot of Black-owned and other, you know, marginalized communities that own businesses that in this realm. So I reach out to them sometimes and say, hey, you know, I would like to support by spending some money and using your services. But yeah, we've had a number of people come out and just want to volunteer their, you know, organizations, construction companies come out, want to volunteer labor, volunteer skills. The donations, you know, we do campaigns, you know, where we send out email blasts and you know, do, you talk about, you know, the testimonial video was a big part of that. And that's really, but honestly, this has been, it's been kind of doing its own thing, and people have just been kind of coming to us and wanting to be a part of it and wanting to support. I think they just like the model and knowing that their money and their resources are really going to go directly into the community.
Indeed.
Now, speaking of partners and what am I trying to think of, contractors and plumbers, etc., have you checked in with OAMI, which is the Oregon Association of Minority Entrepreneurs? Because I know that they do have a list of minority businesses, minority and women-owned businesses, specifically contractors, electricians, plumbers, etc., etc. Because like you, having I did 2 years of AmeriCorps, and so one of the things that I did when I subsequently left that and went to manage a federal program is reach out to organizations like OAMI, like Youth Builders and whatever, to connect with them for doing work. And so I'm wondering if you've checked in to OAMI as a possible resource.
I have heard of the service. I can't say that I've been, you know, used the list much. Luckily for me, I've had people reach out, or I've known people who know somebody. But I have heard of that resource and definitely do plan to use it more as we expand and grow, and able to do more work.
Great, great. You're listening to More Talk Radio here on Your Community Connection, KBOO Portland. And I do want to encourage calls if people are curious. The number is 503-231-8187. And as you've heard Wyatt said, one of the things that he needs to help keep this effort strong, one thing is a connection to the building trades. And so be mindful of where your energy might go, whether it's sweat equity, to borrow the slogan from Habitat for Humanity, or whether you have the financial wherewithal, or if you have the skill sets that would actually make a difference and expand their capacity. Check in and see what you can do to help Wyatt. And the phone number is 503-231-8187 here at our studio if you want to talk to Wyatt. But if people want to contact you, what's your website? How can they learn more about what you're doing, Wyatt?
Yeah, so we're actually revamping our website, but you can go there to donate. Right now, just to be transparent, we're not really accepting a lot of volunteers right now unless they're licensed, bonded, and insured in a trade of some sort. Mm-hmm. Because we have over 300 volunteers signed up, and we just don't really have a lot of work that we would want volunteers to be doing. A lot of the volunteers do, you know, maybe some landscaping and some cleanup jobs, which will have more opportunities for those in the spring and the summer. But right now, we really would like our volunteers to have the credentials so we can get the quality work and make sure it's insured and everybody's covered.
Okay, so not so much sweat equity. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it's takingownershippdx.org, and you can learn about our mission there. We do have some projects up there. The best way to see the projects that we've done as we're updating the website is our Instagram, which is also Taking Ownership PDX. We post a lot on there, sharing our stories if you don't have that. We also do on our Facebook as well, which is the same handle. And if you don't have that, you know, we will be updating our website. I just had to fall behind on that as we're trying to revamp it.
Well, certainly, of course. You're trying to juggle a whole lot of things at the same time. So just have patience, folks. There's a lot of work to be done. Go ahead.
Uh-huh. It's a small operation. It's just me doing a lot of that stuff. And I have a project manager that helps with, you know, the actually getting a lot of that work done. But it is a lot of work. And with the amount of publicity and the exposure we've gotten recently, the influx of people coming in and It's been a bit overwhelming at times, but we're getting there. We're getting like I said, we're building the plane while we're flying.
While you're flying, building the plane. Excellent. are there other models of similar type of projects that you are familiar with, either, you know, here in Oregon or around the country of people doing this type of work that you're familiar with? Are you in touch with different types of organizations or groups to doing work that you are doing?
There is an organization, and I can't remember if I got it right. Maybe Community Trust of Oregon or somewhere along those lines. I'm blanking on the name, but mm-hmm. they do similar work. They're not culturally specific like my organization is. I don't think anybody's really doing the work as hands-on. You know, a lot of organizations, a lot of nonprofits, there's a lot of hoops you got to jump through, and very specific situations you have to be in to have access to the services. And the way I'm operating, the reason why I started this is because I was aware of that. I know that there's a lot of money that kind of go to the same organizations. And it make it very difficult for families to access them, to where it actually deters families from even reaching out. So that's why I wanted to be very grassroots, very guerrilla style, and start reaching out and getting this money out to people who deserve it, to a community that very much deserves it. So I don't think there's anybody quite doing things operating like we have been, but I think there's people in the same realm. Yeah.
Excellent, excellent. And we have Joe is on the line who has a comment or question for you, Mr. Wyatt. Joe, thank you for calling.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
My question is, I am in a position where my wife and I moved from the Midwest years ago, and have done very well financially in the Portland area. We are looking at selling our home in, say, in the next half dozen years. When that happens, we believe in the home ownership model. Is it possible to sell a home at below market value so that you are helping a minority person come into a neighborhood and have a head start with the mortgage because it has been sold at a reduced rate, say a just for an example, say a $400,000 home, you're selling it at say $250,000 in order to give somebody that initial entry into a market? Or is there problems with what I have heard as short selling, that you'll have encounter problems concerning that's something that is not acceptable?
Yeah, it's funny you come to me with this because I just bought my house for under the market value from a woman who has the same mindset as you. And she sold me this house for what was left on the mortgage and gifted my family a very large sum of equity by this home, purchasing this home. She wanted to put a black family back in the Albina neighborhood. So it is very much possible. I just did it back in December. And and I just love that that's even something you're considering. But it is very much possible.
Okay. Is there any kind of legal ramifications on that? Because I was under the impression that sometimes the tax code will not accept something like that. Or are you familiar with that, any of those legal options? Or would one need to work with an attorney in order to do that? Or is it acceptable to do it on one's own? And how would I go about finding the right fit where I feel like I would want to turn it over to somebody who is very reputable and solid, but somebody who can use the bump up in the equity?
As far as finding the proper candidate, I don't know exactly how to go about that. Obviously, you need to find somebody who can afford the mortgage, but from my understanding, when the seller, sold it to us, she talked to her accountant, and there was no tax ramifications for this at all. People do this actually pretty often, usually more so within families.
Correct.
But
right.
It's your property, and obviously you just can't sell it under. I mean, you can't sell it under what you owe, but. There was no problems with this, and I guess this is actually, it's not really super common, but it happens pretty often.
All right, thank you.
And I have resources. I have a really good lender and realtor that could help you with that process when you're ready.
Okay, and you are someone who I have been very impressed with hearing you, and would contact you in the future on that.
I appreciate that. Thank you so much.
Okay. Have a good day.
You too.
And
thank you
listening.
For your call, Joe.
You're listening to More Talk Radio. We are speaking with Mr. Randall Wyatt, the Executive Director of Taking Ownership, PDX. Our numbers here this morning are 503-231-8187. If you have a question or comment for Mr. Wyatt, please give us a call. If you want to know more about his organization or how to volunteer or donate or anything related to this, we welcome your calls, 503-231-8187. Mr. Wyatt, you mentioned earlier in terms of your relationship to hip-hop, and I'm from, I like to say, the first generation of hip hop. And one of the things that we envisioned was the sense of hip hop and community and that sort of ownership and the importance of community. And, you know, before all the bling and all the record corporations took ownership of that. There was a grittiness or reality that was so endemic to hip hop. Yeah, I'm not sure where I'm going with that, but I appreciate you for living out what I think is the best of hip hop.
Absolutely, you know, I think hip hop was originated. I mean, it was originated also to be a party type music too, you know. But it was definitely created for to be the voice of a voiceless, and you know, in the words of KRS-One, you know, to be hip is to be updated with what's going on around you, and to hop is to hop up and do something about it. So now that's what how I, you know, I was raised on. I have a brother that's significantly older than me, so I was raised on some of that earlier hip hop that was very community oriented and Afrocentric, and so that's definitely made a big impression on me and why I decided to use hip hop as a tool for community outreach and activism, and and it laid quite the foundation and helped, you know, and I think it helped a lot of people and got me kind of in the realm of working with youth and mental health.
So you know what my next question is going to be then. So youth, they're going to be the next wave. Any plans for getting a youth component involved in this? Because I'm going to tie in something you said earlier, which is you used to be part of the Youth Builders. And I remember connecting with the Youth Builders to have a website built for an organization that I was running. I also connected with Youth Builders many years ago. I used to work with an organization called the Housing Development Corporation. That's the HDC. I think I got that right. And I remember when they partnered with Youth Builders, and then Youth Builders went on to work with what was then the Housing Authority of Portland, which is now, I think, Home Forward, to help with some of the construction. So I'm just wondering, knowing that there's not enough apprenticeship programs and opportunities, what's your vision for the next wave of taking ownership?
Yeah, so right now we're trying to, you know, get our 501c3 status, and then we'll have that 501c3 status, which will be the donation, where the donations will go. Right now we have a fiscal sponsor, which is Friends of Noise, which is a black-owned music-oriented organization that provides
Andre.
Andre.
Shout out to Friends of Noise.
Yep, so for those of you who do donate, you will see All Ages Music PDX when you donate. Don't be concerned. Just make sure you, you know, specify you want this to go to Taking Ownership PDX. But yeah, so once we get the 501c3 status, we'll have that entity for the donations, and that's where we'll do a lot of the philanthropy work, and then we're going to have the LLC, which we're working on being like more of a construction remodeling company, where that's where we'll be providing a service, and a percentage of that will go towards the 501c3, and then we hope to have some sort of apprenticeship program through the LLC as well, so where we can do help with some provide opportunities for people who come out of like Youth Builders, POIC, which is another organization I used to work for, you know, the Rose and Mary Anderson Schools. They also have a construction company or construction program now that a buddy that I know runs. So yeah, so it's definitely a goal of ours if we can pull it off.
Wonderful. Great. And I know that there are unions that have apprenticeship programs, and oh gosh, it was many, many, many years ago, Cecil and I had on Keith Edwards and a few other black leaders from some of the unions who talked about some of their apprenticeship groups. So this is a great opportunity not only to take ownership, but to build ownership, it sounds like.
That's another big goal, is to be able to provide that, you know, that 20%, so we can get help people get into homes and avoid the mortgage insurance. And, you know, yeah, I would love to create, especially with people like Joe, and that's another movement we hope to start, you know. The woman who sold me this home, Annie Moss, she, you know, what a radical philanthropist to be able to donate so much equity and put me to create a homeowner, a black homeowner, and she changed my life. And sounds like Joe wants to do the same thing. If we can get more people who have the means to do something like that, that's going to help significantly rebuild the black homeowner community as well.
We have a few minutes left, and we want to let you know that you can call us here to speak with Mr. Wyatt. Our phone number is here, 503-231-8187, and we will take your phone calls. And in the meantime, if you would like to participate, if you're not able to lift the hammer, you can share some of your cash. And for those of you who are very, what's the right word to say? Well, very traditional, if you have write paper checks, you can actually write a paper check. And as Mr. White mentioned, you can mail checks payable to Friends of Noise. The address is 4560 Northeast 75th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97218. And in the memo section, write Taking Ownership PDX LLC. And you will be sent a confirmation of your donations for tax purposes. So they'll make it easy for all of us, however you want to contribute.
And it helps us a lot if you specify, like, through email or that you want a tax letter. We had a lot of donors, and so we're getting better at that process of just providing that donation letter immediately. But yeah, it helps if you can reach out.
All right, and as you say that, a lot of people are just wanting to give and donate, and there's I believe a generosity of spirit and of grace. So, you know, this is an upstart organization. They are doing the best they can. So, you know, be patient.
Yes. Please be patient.
Well, I don't know if I want to call them an upstart. I would like to call them a firmly rooted. How about that?
Okay, I like that. firmly rooted in the community.
Yeah, I'm a flip it. Yeah. But I want to thank you for coming on board. I know you have to go. We kept you longer than we said, but, you know, I'm going to say it must have got exciting to you. And be welcome and be a friend and come on anytime you've got anything that you want to share. And I'm especially looking to cement those relationships with other contractors and business people in the field. So be sure, folks, to let people know far and wide about this effort. Taking ownership is taking ownership in many ways. It means taking ownership of the process. And, you know, whether you're part of the black community or not, you can help strengthen the Portland community by taking ownership of our problems jointly and communally and solving them. So we hope you do that.
Last word, Mr. Wyatt.
Yeah, I mean, just thank you for having me on here. I appreciate anybody who's supporting this effort. It is a very necessary effort, and I you know, this is the most rewarding work I've ever done. I wish that y'all can just see how the reactions that I get from these homeowners that we help out. So just know that, you know, if you are donating to this organization, you are really making an impact on a community that really deserves this sort of reparation type services. So just thank you for having that. And I guess another some shameless promo. I do have an album coming out April 6th. So, you know, check me out and go to Randall Wyatt Music on Facebook or just Randall Wyatt on Music. That's where I'm promoting.
Cool. Well, here's another shameless plug. I do a show called An Evening of Afrotainment here on KBOO. So So make sure I get the link for the MP3 or whatever format it's in so we can play it.
Oh, definitely. I'll send that over to you.
Okay, great. Well, it's been a pleasure. It's been a pleasure seeing how hip-hop roots also bring great fruits. You know, the thing is it's just important on so many layers that we step up and we take ownership. We take ownership of the problems, and we take ownership of the solutions and the means to achieve the dreams. And I want to just salute you, Randall, for you know, doing just that and truly representing hip-hop as well as your family properly. You done PDX proud, as they say.
Oh, thank you. That means a lot to hear. Thank you.
All right. You're listening to Your Community Connection, KBOO Portland. This has been More Talk Radio. I am Celeste. I'm here with
Cecil.
And we'll hear you next week. Stay tuned to the Old Mall Variety Hour. This is all about community, and we're standing strong for all community here on KBOO Portland.
Hi, I'm David Brower, David R. Brower. I add the R because there are 100 other David Browers in the United States, and that keeps me separate from most of them. I like the direction you're going in, KBOO, Portland, and I wish you had a lot more company.
KBOO Community.